All right, let me begin just by saying this today, that in 2005, when we started Emmaus Church, the core of our heart at that moment was to begin a church, to start a work that would make a practical impact in the city. We talked about pursuing a spirituality that made a real difference in real life. It's not that that was super unusual. I think most churches want to make an impact in the world, but we were trying to highlight that as kind of the measurement of the success of this effort. Initially, what that the kind of the form that that took, probably because of the gift set or the at least the interest that I have, is we taught a lot about personal transformation within the context of community. And we did a lot of eating together. Some of us were raising our kids at the same time. It made building community a pretty easy thing for us to do. I'm talking about in the early years. And I think we really emphasized that. And I think if Emmaus is known for anything over the last decade or so, it's been known as a place where you can find community. But it can't stop with personal transformation and community development, right? And from the beginning, we said we want to be about the restoration of all things. We want to be about acts of compassion. We want to make a difference where we are. And I frankly am just not as, that's an area where I need to grow personally. And I don't think you need to arrive in order to lead. I think you can lead in the process. But as we've really identified the restoration of all things as really the hallmark of the next chapter of our life, and specifically as God has provided for us this theater as our home in the last year, which was really just a gift, I think it emphasized this idea that you are to be a church that's making a difference in the heart of this town. You put us right here in downtown. And so what I've wanted to do for the whole fall, and you've heard it in what I've been able to teach, and I've also wanted to invite other voices in to give us some language and some ideas and some training around the idea of engaging the culture with the gospel. We need to do better at this. I need to do better at this. I think that we're in a time and a place, historically speaking, where there's more division between the church and the culture, and there's less of a sense of clarity about the effective way to actually make a difference in the relationships that we have that don't share convictions about Christ being the Lord or about the church being a place that is a welcoming place for people. And so I've invited several people to share in the last few weeks, and I invited Ken and Leah to come back today to do kind of a part two of what they offered last week, because I thought it was just so helpful. They led a workshop for our home group leaders, and the material was so important that we said we needed to offer a workshop for the whole church, but felt like the whole church wouldn't stay after church for a workshop. And so that led us to say, why don't you guys just take two Sundays and offer this material? And so it's super practical, but it's super important. I feel like I found this morning very challenging to me personally in terms of lifestyle. And I hope that you will open your hearts and your minds to their perspective this morning. It's absolutely the direction that we're feeling God leading us to take. And the hope is that they'll have some real helpful ideas and some thoughts about how we can do a really good job engaging our culture with the gospel. Why don't you guys come on up? I forgot to bring anything to help with that, so you can carry it all. But would you welcome Ken and Leah again this morning?
All right, welcome everyone again. Good morning again. My name's Ken. This is Leah. We've been a part of this community for about 18 months now, and we've just been so grateful for the way that we have experienced this idea of community here. Rich and Melissa, actually, when we moved here, Rich and Melissa Lister invited us into their community, which they then suddenly said, which we might have to host in our house in order for it to happen. So we have been hosting an Emmaus community group in our house as a way to get to know everybody here from the beginning, which is pretty great. So last week we got started, and I liked what Nate said. He said, you know, this is just helpful to have a new tool in the tool belt. And so today we kind of want to present another tool and some more stories and just the idea of living on purpose to be salt and light, the aroma of Christ in the community, in the neighborhood, wherever you go, that you're kind of leaving that inviting light experience with other people. We want to kind of just talk about that just being normal. it's just the everyday, every person kind of activity that's both our privilege and then also God's expectation, his commandment to all of us. So today I want to introduce a tool, and it's just simply a triangle. So on your notes, you can just draw a triangle. And at the top of the triangle, you're going to write the word up. On one side, you'll write the word in, one of the apexes, and on the other, the word out. Up, in, and out. And this, for us, it's kind of like a, it's intended to frame this conversation and our belief that this, for us, should just be a lifestyle as followers of Jesus. And we're going to look again at his lifestyle and what he did in modeling this to us. So Jesus lives this incredibly beautiful life in front of us. And it's amazing, you know, you think about like what God actually reveals about himself and for us and about us in the life of Jesus. It's unexpected. He didn't necessarily have to do it the way that he did. And so there's purpose and there's meaning in how Jesus did reveal God to mankind in himself, in flesh, in person. And so one of the things we're going to talk about, Jesus, he seemed in constant connection with his Father. You know, this idea that he was richly connected to the Father, always living out of response to what he was seeing and hearing from God the Father. Then he also made space for several specific people to walk with him in the journey, in his ministry. And then we're going to talk about doing that ourselves, making space for several people to do this together, to go together. And the last one is how he announces himself on earth. It's via his mission. He says, I'm the fulfillment of this prophecy from ages ago about, you know, setting captives free, binding up the brokenhearted. Today, this has been accomplished in your presence in me and through me. He's introducing something new to the world. And he's God. He could just like announce it from the sky. And yet how he did it is he involves us. He does it one at a time. He does it person by person. And it's this beautiful thing about the gospel of Jesus. The kingdom of God is moving person by person. And magically, it's made it to us. Right? Thousands of years later, millions of people later, it made it to you and it made it to me. And it's on us to give it to the next community as well. So he says, just what I like to, you know, Jesus's mission on earth, Luke chapter 19, verse 10, I'm just going to reference this, says, for the Son of Man has come to seek and to save that which was lost. You know, he's created the earth. He's created mankind, humanity, to be in this relationship, the garden relationship with God himself, and it's all been broken. And so he's coming to restore. He comes to rescue and restore that which was lost and to bring us back. And that's what he gives us. Paul calls it the ministry of reconciliation, that we're actually bridging the gap, bringing people back into fellowship and relationship with God. So as we see in Jesus' life, he's got this kind of triangle of relationships, up, relationship up with his Father, relationship in with a few chosen followers, and a relationship out with the world he's come to rescue and restore. And when he calls his disciples, he says, come follow me. You know, and in that context, we think he's going somewhere, right? He actually meets them in the midst of whatever they're doing. They're fishing, they're on the sea. He says, come follow me. And he turns and he goes somewhere. And so kind of the indication is we're going with him. And he invites them, you know, very intimately into walking with him. And this level of, like, we're going to eat together. We're going to talk together. We're going to minister together. We're going to even weep together. And he says, I want you to kind of know my ways and let my ways become your ways. So there's a great passage for this that Pastor Nate has had us open up to, Luke chapter 6, verse 12. So you guys can turn there now. I'm just going to read a couple of these over the next couple of minutes. Chapter 6, verse 12 says, one of those days, Jesus went out to a mountainside to pray and spent the night praying to God. So a little bit of context. This is the beginning of Jesus's ministry. He has he's been baptized. He's received the Holy Spirit as a dove. He's gone. The Spirit then led him out into the wilderness, and he faced and overcame the temptations of Satan while he was there. Now he's returning, and he's about to begin his ministry on earth, and this is how he does it. He spends a night in prayer, first receiving from God the Father. And then he comes down, and his next act is actually to invite several in, and he chooses the 12. So I love this phrase, and the idea of this triangle we've borrowed from a pastor and author. His name is Mike Breen, and he has a great teaching on these kind of several shapes and how these shapes are kind of discipleship tools that you can talk about your own triangle. Like, hey, how's my relationship up? How's my relationships in? And how are my relationships out? And it's just this constant thing. You can use this as a diagnostic for the whole church. You can use this as a diagnostic for your family and for your small group community. Our small group's kind of starting to make some transitions in this direction. And so that idea, like, as a church, we're pretty good up. And Nate said we're known for that kind of inward community relationship. And then what does it look like for us to be intentional about strengthening our outward component? But it begins with an up relationship, you know? And so Jesus is receiving from his Father. It says I like how this author wrote it. He's inhaling from the presence of God so he can exhale the will of God into the world. I just love that phrase. And Jesus talks about himself and our relationship with him as one of receiving as well. He says, I am the vine and you're branches. And you cannot, you know, like a branch just can't, you know, sit by itself and produce fruit. We can't be productive outside of the life of the vine. He says that's how we're to live, is in this constant relationship with him, listening, hearing, going to him and receiving from him in order that we can accomplish the mission and the purpose that he has given us in the world. So our up relationship with Jesus is how we abide in him. And you can talk to one another. How is your up? How is your up relationship with Jesus? How is that sense of abiding? What are you hearing from him recently? And so then, next verse, verse 13, says, when morning came, he called his disciples to him. We understand that to be as many as 70, maybe over 100 people that are kind of those early followers of Jesus. And then he chooses from among them. So he calls his disciples to him and chose 12 of them, whom he also designated as apostles. The Gospel of Mark adds that they might be with him and that he might send them out to preach. And I love that little added bit there because it says that they would be with him. And I think for us, you know, Leah and I, we ministered, we spent 8 years in San Francisco trying to start a church from scratch, similar to how this church has come into being out of thin air. And in our time there, trying to reach people who are farthest from Christ, people who weren't necessarily just going to come to church because we invited them to, you know, one of the things I think that became hard on us over time is just not having that real committed with people. That we needed some peers in this with us. If you've known people who've been missionaries overseas, if you've known people who've, you know, pastors, for example, that idea of like, man, I'm all for the love and knowledge of God in the world. I'm all for sharing that with, you know, those who are kind of in ministry are pouring out. But if you don't have people who are with you in it, it can be something that is kind of taking from you over time. So there's this real important thing that Jesus actually models for us. And what's beautiful is that he didn't have to do it this way, right? Jesus, he's the designer of life. He's the designer of our souls. He's the designer of the earth. And what he comes in and he's revealing to us kind of the life, the kingdom life, how it should be lived. And he's modeling for us that we should be in constant fellowship with him and that we need a couple of people with us. Not just so that sometimes we find that like community is what's most important, but for Jesus, community was very important, a very important component of what he had come to the earth to do. He also had a mission and a purpose. So community without purpose can sometimes get stale, can sometimes get even unhealthy, right? And purpose without community can really, you know, just kind of be depleting. And so Jesus puts this out there and he says, you know, you need a couple of people to really do this with. So that's our in kind of relationships, and those inward relationships, living in love with one another, is what Jesus lays out as the only identifying characteristic of Christians on earth. He says in John 13:35, he says, "By this all men will know that you're my disciples if you have love for one another." We're to be known by the kind of love that people can experience just coming into our presence as we interact with one another. You know, it's one thing to kind of be an exceptional person to a lot of people where they're like, "Oh, I love that." They're like the only Christian I know that lives this way, that is this way. Like, oh, they're an exception, you know, because what I believe about, you know, religion and church and all those things, it's kind of been tainted for whatever reason. But, you know, this person is an exception. But you're an exception, but together, you and your community and a couple of people out on display to your neighbors or to your workplace or to the community around us, you can't just say that's an exception. You can say what that is beautiful. I think how those people interact is something kind of provocative and different and something that's attractive to me. So Jesus then finally, the third part of this triangle is we move on to verse 17, and Jesus reaches out. So you can kind of say that Jesus like gets up in the morning, you know, Jesus is up and he's out with Jesus, with God personally. Then he invites others in, kind of the shocking way that he decides to reveal what a relationship with God looks like. It's actually something that we live out in community. And then he reaches out, and verse 17 says, "He went down with them and stood on a level place. A large crowd of his disciples was there, and a great number of people from all over Judea and from all over." And then he begins the ministry of healing, of touching. And, you know, people, it says here that they were trying simply to touch him because power was coming out from him and he was healing them all. And it reminds us that Jesus never lost sight of his purpose on earth. So he's connected to God, he invites some other people in, and then he goes on the mission that he was sent for. And that's why we use this word mission, missional, that this is what it looks like to live on purpose and live on mission and live missionally. It's taking the love and the hope and the promise, the light, like we talked about yesterday or last week, the light of God as you go in community. People can see and observe something beautiful about you and about your life. To take the love of God to a world far from him in person in the same way that Jesus brought it to us. So we're just going to kind of use that as a transition then. You know, last week we laid out kind of a big idea, and that's, to us, you know, up and in are things that we spend a lot of time together as a church focusing in on. And today we're going to just kind of focus a little bit more on the out element, that dimension of reaching out and how to make it practical and how to make it normal. And so we're going to invite Leah to keep sharing.
So one of the practical things you can do to get yourself out is just to practice this idea of open circles. And that's number one up there on your sheet. And it's just choosing to live an open life and being able to invite other people into your community. And it sounds really simple and normal, but let me give you a couple examples of not open circles. So having moved here in the last a couple years, I'm new everywhere I go. And so I showed up somewhere and I wanted to volunteer. I wanted to be involved. And I'm having this conversation with a lady trying to find out, well, what can I do and how can I help? And she looks at me in the eyes and says, "We're a tight-knit group of people. But if you show up enough, we might let you in." And I think she just said what a lot of us like think but don't like say. And she just is one of those like verbal processors and processed right in front of me. And I was like, "Oh, lady, you have no idea how much I'm going to show up." Like, I just take it as a challenge. Some people are like, "I'm out." I'm like, "I'm in." And a year later, I am in. You just show up enough and you work. But that would be an example of a closed circle. They had a way that they did things. They had a group that they worked with, and they didn't really want anyone to mess that up. Another time we went to a meet and greet. We were meeting a coach for the first time for a team that one of our kids was on. And this is like the meet the team. And we walk into this pizza restaurant. You guys, every single person is looking down at their phones, adults included. And my kid is like, "Can I have your phone?" I'm like, "No." He's like, "But mom, there's," I'm like, "You're supposed to be talking to people." And he's like, "But there's no one to talk to." And I'm like, "I know." But I was like, "I am not giving you my phone. We're going to." So anyway, now I've become the mom. When I go to new places, I literally like go down the line and introduce myself. "Hi, I'm so-and-so's mom." It's completely awkward for everybody, but I'm going to be awkward so I can get to know them. And people need it. And so having open circles is just being in community where you can bring people alongside with you. One of the ways we practice this, when my kids were younger, you do a lot of play dates so you can come out of the house and not go crazy. And so a couple friends and I decided every Friday morning at 10 a.m., we're going to be at this specific playground. And what that did is if I met somebody along the week somewhere else, it just gave me a place, oh, hey, we meet on Fridays, and our kids are always at this playground on Fridays. And it just gave us a place to invite people to. And so you can do that, whether it's you go to breakfast or you, whatever it is you do, a rhythm you do with friends, just be the friend that it's okay to like show up with strangers and then have your community love on them. It's the difference between being a here I am person, like who's gonna talk to me, who's gonna pay attention to me, and instead being a there you are person. You walk in the room and you identify who can I show up for.
I love that, and I just love like the idea that for you to be a person that walks into a room looking, and you know, talking about last week, this idea of looking for those who are missing, who are valuable, that are missing. It's like there you are. Like I, you know, actually at this church, Julie, in the children's ministry, every time our kids show up, it's like there you are. You know, it's so amazing, and our kids just experience so much life out of that. So anyway, love that. So number two, we're just gonna kind of keep going through these things as just examples, as ideas that you guys can add to your tool belt. The next one says, keeping margin so that you can say yes. Being able to say yes to people, you know, obviously it's that there's this idea of some introduction, some invitation, I mean, that we're intentional about being in a place, building relationships, having a place to invite people to. For us, another book that kind of helped shape some of our practice here was a book called The Tangible Kingdom by these guys named Hugh Halter and Matt Smay. And they talk about creating margin, and they have these three words, frequency, availability, and spontaneity. So frequency is this idea that it just takes a lot of contact. You know, you're not just going to get relationship out of nowhere. And so for me, you know, living and working in San Francisco, worked from a home office, so often I would go, and we didn't actually have space for a home office in San Francisco, so I did a lot of coffee shop work. And it took me a while to realize that frequency is not like I just keep going to the same coffee shop, but I go on the same day and at the same time. So it's like Tuesday mornings from this time to that time. So there's a lot of people that are there on Tuesday mornings weekly in the same way that I am. And so frequency means I'm creating that opportunity to see the same people over and over again. Leah shared last week about when she goes to a supermarket, she tries to go to the same checkout person week after week just to kind of begin to create that sense of recognition and opportunity and being available. And we talked about Halloween last week, and just choosing to stay home and walk with our neighbors and be with our neighbors, that was us being available. You know, we wanted to be somewhere else because we've got family we wanted to spend that time with. You know, not that we wanted to be somewhere else and we sacrificed to be there, but we could have been somewhere else, and we chose to be in our neighborhood and to walk with people. And that was us being available. And what came out of that time of just walking the neighborhood, she ended up with a play date with somebody, some of our other neighbors. We just had dinner together. These are things that are what happens spontaneously. And so relationship really kind of takes it to the next step through spontaneous interactions. And you're with somebody or with someone often enough that they're like, oh, hey, we're doing this thing. You want to come? And you just want to be in a position to be able to say yes. It's so hard when you're like, yeah, I totally want to. You know what? But I've got, you know, my small group on Tuesday night, and we've got like soccer on Wednesday night, and you just start going down this list of, you're like, hold on, let me get my calendar out. You're like, 3 weeks from now on Tuesday, I've got a half hour, you know, and you just realize people just go like, yeah, okay, you know, if it works out, fine. And they're just like, yeah, never mind. You know, obviously you have your own people, and I'm not one of those. And so creating margin is, you know, those ideas, frequency, availability, and spontaneity help us kind of take that forward into relationship.
Number three is kindness. Kindness in crisis, big and small. And this is another one we hit on a little bit last week, but I want you to take a moment and think of a time where someone did something kind for you. Does something come to mind? If it did, pretty quickly, let me see your hand. If you can think of something, time. Okay. So for me, there was a time a couple had us over for dinner. We were in the middle of the church stuff in San Francisco, and they had us over for dinner, and they paid for a babysitter. They had us at their home, gave us this beautiful meal. They're wonderful hosts. And at that time in our life, people invited us to dinner for three reasons. They either needed something from us, they had a really strong opinion they wanted to share about something about our church, or they were going to break up with us, and they were letting us know they were leaving the church. And so that whole dinner, I had that like knot in the pit of my stomach, and I was anxious just waiting for the shoe to drop. Like, okay, what is it that they're going to tell us? And they never did. They just had us over for dinner to love on us. And it was such a pivotal, critical act of kindness that my heart needed in that season of my life. And what I wanted to say about kindness is, you know, culture's picked up on the power of kindness, and now it's kind of popular. You know, pass it forward, buy someone a coffee. There's like random acts of kindness on bumper stickers. But it's not just a bumper sticker slogan. Kindness is a fruit of the Spirit. And it's a powerful thing. In the same way that people need grace, it's like a sacred, holy thing. People need forgiveness. There's power in kindness, and God can show up there. And so I just don't ever underestimate tiny little things that you can do for people that just shows I'm paying attention. I noticed. I care about you, from mowing their lawn to offering to help with a kid or just leaving a note on their door. Or their doorstep, you know, whatever it is that is just natural for you to do in your life, do it. Don't ever underestimate what kindness can do. Number four is to create traditions that involve your whole family or community. And the reason I say this one is that I don't want this message to feel like, oh, I have to add things to my life, because nobody wants to add more things to their life. What we do want to do is, like, have it overlap, have it layer. So a few years ago, my friend was all stressed out that she was making Thanksgiving dinner for her whole family. She's the only person that cooks. She doesn't have a lot of community or extended family that helps. So she was all stressed out, and I was like, well, all I need to do for my dinner is make pies. So I'll just make like twice as many pies and bring you my pies. She's like, you would do that? I'm like, sure, it'll be fun. And I have, you know, my daughter and I, like, we'll get the little thing out, you know, where you, the apple core peeler thing that, like, yes, my kids love that. So that started a tradition in our family to make pies for our neighbors. And so every year, like right around the week of Thanksgiving, we buy apples. I totally buy the crusts. I am not fancy. I buy the crusts. But if Williams-Sonoma has these cute little puncher things, it makes them look really good with little effort. And you buy a box and some pretty paper, and all of a sudden it looks like you have a professional pie. So anyway, this has been what my family does, but it's a tradition that my kids look forward to, and now they're old enough, they can kind of, I want to take it to, you know, Mr. So-and-so that lives down the street. And our neighbors, like, it's unexpected. They love this. It's just an act of kindness, again, that builds relationship. You don't have to make pies, but what I want you to think of is, what's a tradition that you do with your community or your family that you can use to be outward in your triangle?
Yeah, it's good. The next one is something that some of us do quite well, and some of us kind of struggle to do this, and it's simply throw a party. Throw a party. This is something I think as Christians, you know, I mean, you look at Jesus in the New Testament, and, you know, like, he's constantly at a wedding, he's constantly at somebody's house, and, you know, you get the sense that, like, you know, the religious of his day are like, what is he even doing there? Do you know what's happening there? And he's just open. He's got these relationships. And like we said last week, it's not that people confuse Jesus, you know, that like, oh yeah, Jesus, you know, we're not really sure where he stands. You know, he's got a lot of clarity in his own life and boundaries, but he's able to walk in the fullness of his relationship with God in the community around him. And I think that's the challenge for us as well. Throwing a party means that we can, without compromising our relationship, our, you know, our message, we can invite people in and have a great time and invite others there. And I think throwing a party is a great place when you think about going with people. You know, that idea of in moving us to out. Going with people, parties are the best way to do that. You know, you throw a cookout, you invite people, your neighbors to come, but then you also invite people from your small group community or from the church. And this kind of mixing of people is so great, so beautiful, because again, as an individual, you know, I just might kind of be an exception in your mind. If you're a neighbor and you're like, oh, you know, I've got all this bad animosity towards church, but, you know, I know you're a Christian, but, like, you're not like the others, you know? And you think, oh, well, shoot, I'm just an exception in their mind. But you start to introduce them to some of your friends, and they watch how you guys live and act and interact with one another. They go, man, he's an exception, but gosh, so is she, so are they. Like, this is actually something kind of intriguing, something beautiful, something provocative. I'm interested in that, and it's starting to kind of push against some of my preconceived ideas. So throwing a party, inviting people into it. We have a couple examples of this. One year for Easter, we threw a dinner party in Easter. Now, here, if I invited you to come to my house on Easter for dinner, most of you would have somewhere else to be, right? Because Easter is like, it's our thing. You know, we have family. It's a big Christian holiday. Like, but when we were living in San Francisco in relationship with a lot of people who weren't Christians, it's funny because it's like this big holiday. The people kind of get a sense, like, I think I should probably be doing something somewhere. But the truth is, they don't, it's not something really celebrated. And so we took this big risk, and we thought nobody's going to be able to come. We invited people over to our house for dinner on Easter evening, and literally everybody said yes. Everybody. Because they're just like, yeah, how great. Like, you know, it's just a normal day for us. So everybody said yes. They came over. We shared in a very small way. It was mostly relationship, but I was able to stand up and say, man, thank you for coming and spending your Easter with us. This is an important tradition and holiday in our family. We believe in the life and teachings of Jesus. I've got this little scripture and a little poem that we just wanted to give to you as a gift to us. Thank you for spending your time with us today. That was it. But it was this very memorable moment, both for us and for others. People were just like, wow, what a beautiful little thing. I got a chance to experience a bit of a taste of what Christian living is like. Our other one is, as a church, we actually threw a block party. Have any of you guys ever done block parties in your neighborhoods? A couple of you. Block parties are so great. Everybody wants to come. Everybody wants to have fun. We did one, and we built it around the idea of bicycles. And in San Francisco, it's a crime. But both people are working all the time, and so nobody teaches their own kids how to ride a bike.
They pay people.
You literally, like, go to Craigslist.
If you want to start a business, that's your business.
Uber your way over, and then train some kids how, you know, take a lunch hour, train some kids how to ride a bike. Seriously, this is happening in Golden Gate Park right now. And so we put together a pretty postcard, come do this thing with us, and I offered to teach kids how to ride bikes. And people showed up. And a family from our school that we knew, it was a pair of moms whose son was in the classroom with our daughter Abigail. And we had gotten to know each other some. And they came and enjoyed, like, I taught their son how to ride a bike, how to, you know, push and pedal and stop and step. Like, I came up with all these crazy things to teach kids how to ride bikes. But what they said to us, you say it better than I do.
I didn't know. They figured out that it was a church thing. They thought, like, my daughter had just invited her friend to come, so he did. And then they show up and realize, like, oh, this is a church thing. And she came over and chatted with me. She was like, I didn't know people like you liked people like us. And we just were able to love on their kid and teach him how to ride a bike.
Yeah.
It was that just simple, but it was a big deal for their family.
It was an open opportunity. So am I done? That's us sharing parties. Throw a party, invite some people, surprise the world.
Number six, share a meal. And Jeremiah talked about this, and I looked at my calendar last night. He talked 7 weeks ago, and he talked about bless, and E was eat. You guys remember that if he was here? And so that was 7 weeks ago. And he said, I had written like once a month. He said 3 times a week, share a meal with somebody else. Once a week, let it be with someone outside your faith community. And I thought, what if all of us had 7 meals with someone outside our faith community in the last 7 weeks? Where would we be in our conversations? Where would we be in our relationship? How much farther would we be in letting someone know that we are for them? Or what opportunities could we have had? Seven meals is a lot of meals. And realistically, it's probably not going to be with the same person. But, you know, I challenged myself. How many of us have done that once? Since he said that. And so the reason I wanted to say it again here, he talked about sharing a meal, but it's just like easy to do. You have to eat 3 times a day, just invite someone to lunch or after church, grab something or go to dinner. if you don't cook, that's okay. You can take them somewhere else. And I wanted to touch on this. Some people have the gift of entertainment. That lady that had us over for dinner, everything was beautiful, like gorgeous. Her home was beautiful. The plates were beautiful. The place settings were beautiful. The meal was beautiful. That's not my gift. I'm not an entertainment person. But the difference is, entertainment is about having the right place settings, the right dishes, everything looks nice. Hospitality is what I'm talking about, it's the state of your heart. And it's how you make people feel when they're in your home. So it's just providing a warm place. And people love that. I love that. We had dinner last night, and I'm like, I'm so glad to not be in charge. It was at a neighbor's house. And it's a warm place, and it doesn't have to be a perfectly set table. So if that's hard for you, just let it go. And just focus on how do people feel when they're in my home. And if you can't get over that, then just invite them to pizza. You'll be okay. Number 7 is use your spiritual gifts and give what you have. My mom and dad are not going to have a block party. They might occasionally have somebody over for dinner. That's going to be a little bit harder for them. But my mom prays. Like, she is an intercessor. And so when she does, whatever she does, she goes all the way. So a few years ago, probably like 10 years ago, I was visiting, and she's like, hey, can you just drive me down and drop me off, on this space, in this place? So I drive her down there. I grew up on the Barrier Islands of North Carolina. And it's just this long strip of like beautiful beaches and islands. But I dropped her off like in the middle of nowhere. It was like near a really big bridge, and there's nothing out there. Now, my mom is a birder, so that kind of explains a lot of her things, but that's not what she was doing. I'm like, Mom, what are you doing? She's like, I'm prayer walking the Outer Banks. I'm like, all of it? She's like, yes. And so she spent about 2 years going and praying over every major road, every major highway, and got a couple friends and recruited them to do like all the neighborhoods. And so she prayed, and that, because that was her gift. My dad's more administrative, so he volunteers and helps seniors enroll in Medicare, because that's his thing. He loves like the details. That would not be mine. So whatever your gift is, use it to be outward.
Yeah, it is really good. This last one, number 8, is identify what God is currently doing in your life and be prepared to share it in a way that's short and concise. So there's a couple of things here. The idea is that you're in relationship with people, you're having conversation with them, and the conversation moves to a place where you could actually talk openly about your relationship with God. It's amazing. Last week, I shared with Nate's flashlight the idea of, oh, there's a story about Jesus, and there's a woman who's brought before him, and a lot of people at that time were kind of came pointing their flashlights at him, and instead he like pointed it up and he covered her, and so this week I have told that story to 2 people who are not churchgoers, who see us as, one of them calls us the Bible thumpers, the other is just a great neighbor who, again, thinks we're just kind of the exception to the rule. And I literally had something fresh that was just current that I could just share with him. And maybe it's something else. Maybe, you're reading something or you're going through a hard time in your life and there's a scripture that's made an impact on you. Right now people are buying self-help books, they're going online, whatever, they're looking for answers. But it used to be that people thought, if I'm looking for something spiritual, I go to the church to find it. And the thing is, like, in recent decades, that's less and less true. And so a lot of our evangelism is still built on this idea that people kind of are pretty familiar with God. If I just invite them to a church, someone like a professional will share the gospel with them. But people like aren't, when they start thinking about spiritual things, they Google it. They YouTube it. They're going in places that you're like, where are you getting this stuff? And there you are, their neighbor as well. And so just the idea of being able to translate something very personal and something very current, like, oh, this week, we were really concerned about this situation, but there's this verse that really spoke to me this week. It meant a lot to me. You share that, that's like a cup of cold water. I mean, people just experience that like, wow, really? Tell me about that. That might be peace. That might be, peace that passes understanding. That might be, how all these little things that our life to us on a daily basis. If you can just kind of be prepared to say like, oh yeah, that's something current that's going on. When an opportunity arises and you're prayerfully looking for opportunities and windows, and you can just bring that out. Like I gave my flashlight story twice this week between last Sunday and this Sunday. Kind of amazing. And people are ready to receive that kind of thing from you. In Colossians 4, verse 5, Paul writes, he says, live wisely among those who are not Christians. This is the New Living Translation, so it's something you'll be familiar with, maybe not in this translation. Live wisely among those who are not Christians and make the most of every opportunity. Let your conversations be gracious and effective so that you will have the right answer for everyone. And I just love the idea of this effectiveness. Effectiveness doesn't happen by accident. You know, you don't become an effective soccer player by accident. You don't become effective at a musical instrument or at work by accident. And neither do we this idea of like living on purpose to bring the love and life of Jesus to the people around us who don't know him. It's something to do on purpose. And being effective, it can just be like, I have a story this week that's kind of my go-to thing I can invite people into when we interact.
So to wrap it up, I just want to leave you with this one encouragement. There will always be something that will hold you back. Extending yourself in hospitality, in friendship, in relationships, sharing your life, it's a vulnerable place. For me, all my insecurities pop up, and I want to try to compare myself. And I have to consistently remind myself that I'm enough, and I don't need to compare my skills or gifts with what someone else might do. And the truth of it, when that shows up in my life, that's my own brokenness talking. That makes sense? And for it's different things for different people. And Nate, not that long ago, did a message, and brokenness was one of the words. But what he said was profound. He talked about how, as Christians, we don't have to answer brokenness with brokenness. That if we want to come against brokenness, if we want to be a part of people that are seeing all things restored, that we, made in God's image, have the power to create, and we can create a better alternative to brokenness. And so when we are faithful in our life, and we're faithful to step out despite our fear, despite our insecurities, despite our own mess, then God will show up. And there's this quote from a Beth Moore Bible study that I loved. She's like, your faithfulness is the key to somebody else's faith. And I really believe that, is that we step out in small ways, then that might be the key to what that person needs, what God is doing in their life. And so this posture of loving people far from Jesus is a part of answering that brokenness and being a part of restoration. But it requires us to live wholehearted, to step out in faith, and to show up every day and not just hide behind our own stuff, but to show up and to go for it. And so that is your encouragement. Nate's going to come back up. And that's it. But it's no small thing.
Great. Good job.
Yeah.
So good. Thanks. Last week, I just invited us a little bit of feedback. This is more of a workshop kind of approach, and I think that it's helpful for us to hear just for a couple of minutes something that stood out, an idea that seemed to resonate with you and your situation. What did you hear in terms of ideas that you might try, insights into a lifestyle of outward awareness that you would draw attention to? Anyone? Go ahead.
I really like the idea of making yourself available. I get very wrapped up in my schedule, and every minute snaps out. And,
yeah.
I need to make sure that I make myself available for those moments to share with someone else.
Yeah.
And I'm already thinking of people in my neighborhood I can apply for.
Yeah, that's good, Katrina. Thanks. Yeah, I feel the same way. In the sense that if I did have an opportunity, which I often do, frankly, to invite somebody to something, I would not have a thing to invite them to other than church stuff, because that's my world is sort of wrapped up in that. So Ken and Lee have challenged me to have a day where there's space, right? So I can have that fresh invitation. Hey, we're not doing anything Thursday night or whatever. That's great. What else? Anything else stand out? Sure. Patrick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's good. That's good. Yeah, that's what I meant last week by this is a new tool in my tool belt. Like I kind of was trained to evangelism is invite people to church. And It's not, like you said, it's a different culture, it's a different time, and so we need to be able to reach people in a different way, right? Yeah, go ahead.
I thought this was excellent in that you two are just being normal Christian people, sharing the love of God to people and just being normal. And people, really, I get turned off by hearing even Christians preaching. Even my girlfriends, I'm being really honest. Because it turns people off.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing. Good job. Thank you so much. Good. Tina.
So I work in a place that's loaded with Christians.
Yep.
And it's a Christian school. So it's hard to be in a context where you're not around Christians.
Yeah. So good. Good, good. Levi, last one.
I work at the Axiom Youth Ministry.
And yeah.
One of the things, like in addition to that, like the youth being like one of the most important target audiences to focus on in terms of shaping a culture, one of the things that occurred to me as I went there was I'm getting a front row seat to seeing how culture is going to change. Children are starting to get access to some of the ways they talk, some of their influences, some of their insights.
Yeah.
So, like, one other really important thing to keep an eye on as Christians is how our youth are developing.
Absolutely.
So we go to a lot of youth centers.
That's good. Great. Good. Good job, Levi. Well, thank you, guys. Anything else?
No, I was just going to say, you know, I think the Axiom is, like, an incredible example of, you know, the church creating a place and a resource for kids wherever they're at, loving them wherever they're at, as far as they are.
Yeah.
And you're on a front row seat of that, which is fabulous. I just think, you know, in my whole sense of time, I think, oh, where I really want to be is like helping out that Axiom, because that's really where it's happening, you know? So it's fantastic. Great job in that.
Good. Thank you both so much. We really appreciate your insights and all your preparation over the last 2 weeks. Thank you so much. Would you stand up with me?